Okay.
When I was in college, so I majored in philosophy, Jewish philosophy, and at that time, the most popular, and it could be still nowadays, the most popular lecture at Harvard is a lecture given by Professor Michael Sandel. He wrote a lot of books, a very interesting speaker. So Harvard University, along with the local TV station in Boston, they took and recorded his lectures on philosophy, and they videoed them, and they had all sources, everything, and they put them on the internet, on YouTube, for free. And it was called Justice, I think. And a bunch of us in the yeshiva at the time, we heard about it, and we watched them. We thought they were fascinating. Very interesting things about moral dilemmas, what was just, what was not just. And while we were watching them, we realized that the Torah has a lot to say about these ethical dilemmas, these issues of justice that Professor Sandel was talking about. So as we watched those videos, we began to take notes, and we began to compile sources regarding how the Torah would approach these ethical dilemmas. And a lot of what we're going to be talking about whenever this shiur happens is going to be based on those videos. They're probably still on YouTube, whoever wants to watch them. They're all there, I think, and we're going to be addressing those issues that he raises, but from the perspective of how the Torah would view that ethical dilemma in that situation. The first one he discussed, I recall, is probably the most interesting one. He started off his lecture with a bang. It's the famous trolley problem. The trolley problem is not very, very old. It goes like this. Imagine you're standing on a track, not on a track, but off the side of the track, and you are watching a horrific, bloody scene about to unfold before your eyes. There is a runaway train hurtling down the tracks at hundreds of miles per hour, heading towards five workers who are on the track. And for the sake of the scenario, the workers do not see the train coming, they do not know it's about to hit them, and if everything goes according to the laws of gravity and physics, so that train is going to obliterate those five innocent human beings momentarily. And you're standing on the track as this is about to happen. And you see next to you is a lever that you can change the direction of the track. And if you change the direction of the track, so it will move, and the train, instead of hurtling towards those five innocent people, will only kill one person standing on the other track. Either way, no matter what you do, someone's going to die. Either you let the train follow towards those five people, or the train will move and go towards that one person. It's within your power to change it. So would you let the train continue towards the five people, or would you change the lever and allow it to move towards the one person? Gut reaction, what would most people say? It depends who the five people are. But gut reaction, 90% of the time, the poll has been taken again and again in universities, colleges, all over the place, 90% of the people will say, move the track to save the five, and unfortunately kill the one. That is what most people will say off their gut reaction, off the top of their head, to save the five and kill the one. And this question is not, this question was set up in a paper of a philosophical discussion by a well-known British philosopher in 1967. Her name was Philippa Foot. And Professor Foot, in this paper dealing with abortion, that was titled The Problem of Abortion and the Doctrine of the Double Effect, set up this question in order to prove a point about aborting a fetus. That's not our discussion right now. But she wanted to prove a point about the value of life. And this was her question, that there's a moral distinction between your intended and your unintended consequence, meaning do I intend to have this person killed, or are they just going to be a bystander to what I'm doing? And that's how people think, versus the action, versus what's going to come out of the action itself. So even though it's an unintended consequence that one person's going to be killed, I am saving these five people. And by diverting the trolley in the spur of the moment, so I can save five lives. And that's how most people would think, says Professor Foot. Now, just in the getting into a little bit of the philosophy, in philosophy there's an idea called consequentialism. Consequentialism means that morality is defined by the consequences of the action. Just, we don't care about other extenuating circumstances. We just care about what's going to be standing in front of me at the end of the day. That is what consequentialism says. And within the school of consequentialism, there's a famous British philosopher named Jeremy Bentham who talks about utilitarianism. Utilitarianism says that whatever has the best utility, whatever maximizes for the most people, is the best way to live your life. And therefore, whatever is the greatest good, said Jeremy Bentham, for the greatest number of people, is the way that you should approach the situation. So in the case of the trolley, a pure utilitarian will say, what? The greatest good for the greatest number of people. I can save 5 people. Unfortunately, I'll kill 1. So according to this school of philosophy, and according to what Professor Foote is saying, and Jeremy Bentham, it is morally correct to save the 5 people and kill the 1, because that is the greatest good for the greatest number of people. Now, when they took this poll, in colleges and universities, they said it's not just enough to think about it, you need to imagine it. So a number of years ago, they replayed this again, and they put a person in a virtual reality situation with the screen and the sounds and everything, with the train and the people. They sent this whole video, and again, when the person had to make an experiential decision by seeing and hearing of what was going on, and the person about to be killed, and the train and all these things, again, 90% of the people did the same thing, because the utilitarian in them said, I need to do the greatest good for the greatest number of people. Now, let's change the dilemma and make it a little more complicated. We're standing by the track again, but this time instead of standing next to the track, we're going to stand on a bridge that is overlooking the track. And as the train is careening down the tracks again, heading towards those 5 people, there's no lever to switch, but in this case, you are standing on the bridge next to an incredibly, incredibly, incredibly large and obese man. And he is peering over the edge of the bridge to see what's going to happen. And you notice that before the train gets to the bridge, if I just give him one quick shove, he'll fall off the bridge, onto the track, and his tremendous girth and size will stop the train in its tracks, and thereby saving the 5 people at the end of the track. So what do we do? How do we react to the situation?
The same thing.
The same thing. The utilitarian will say what? The greatest good for the greatest number of people. Push the man off the track in order to save the 5 people. But is that really what your gut is telling you? Isn't there something inside your head saying, I'm not going to push a guy off a bridge? It's crazy. Who pushes people off of bridges? Only lunatics do that in the subway. So why am I going to push someone off a bridge? Something's not clicking in your head. And that dilemma is added to Professor Foote's question regarding the trolley. Why, if it's a clear case of being utilitarian, if it's a clear case of the greatest good for the greatest number of people, how come something inside your head is telling you, I'm not going to push a guy off a bridge in order to save 5 people, but when it comes to pulling the lever, something in your head says, of course I'm going to pull the lever, I'm going to save 5 people. Something is clicking in your head and telling you that the cases are not the same. But if I look at them and I balance on a spreadsheet, it's the same question. So the issue is why. What is clicking inside your head to explain this issue, what's called the double effect? When I have the same foreseen outcome, but something about the outcome is different. The way I get the outcome is different. So what does the Torah say about this question that will help us understand the dilemma of Professor Foote and the double effect? Let's begin at the beginning of the sources. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, and I endowed on an Aleph records that there was a majority vote by the Chachamim of the generation that they said that in every other case of the Torah, 610 mitzvos, so if a person is told to give up your life or to violate the mitzvah of the Torah, you should violate the mitzvah of the Torah. If a person says, you know, eat this Big Mac or I'm going to kill you, so the answer is, no, pass the mayo. I'm going to have that Big Mac. It'll be delicious. That's the proper response. However, except for avodah zarah, murdering someone, and gerayos, having an inappropriate relationship. And the Gemara explains that the reason why you can't murder someone else to save your own life is based on a svara. It's not a pasuk in the Torah, but any thinking human being can come up with the logic. And the explanation is in the following story told by the Gemara. The governor of the town told an individual, go and kill so-and-so, and if you don't kill him, I'm going to kill you. So this individual, who was in this little moral predicament, went to Rabbah, the leader of the generation, and he said to him, better that you should be killed than kill someone else. You need to let yourself be killed in this situation. The famous line being, is your blood redder than his? Is your life any more valuable? How can you take into your own hands to decide that killing that person is more beneficial to the world than having you being killed? You can't make that decision.
What if you know the person is going to be killed?
So that's a different case. We'll get to that in a second. Fine. So early in the Gemara, that's an Ayin Dalet. On Ayin Gimel, so the Gemara teaches us that if a person is going to kill somebody else, you see someone running after somebody else with a knife, ready to stab them in the back, and are you allowed to kill that person? So the answer is yes. You shouldn't stand by idly while someone else is going to be killed, says the Torah, and therefore you need to murder in that situation. So the Rambam cites this for Halach in the Yisrael Torah, and the Shulchan Aruch says this. No one debates the idea that if someone is going to kill somebody else, a rodeis, then you should step in and kill that person who's going to kill somebody else. Now, the difficulty arises when you have a responsibility to murder someone in order to save the lives of other people. The two people are not connected to each other. Someone's life is making other people's lives hanging in the balance, even though person A is not doing anything directly to influence person B. Is person A considered a rodeis? His life is keeping other people from being alive. So can I kill him even though he's not directly pursuing the other people? So says the Tosefta in Maseches Truma. And it clearly deals with the dilemma. It says that if people are approached by a bunch of Gentiles and they're told, hand over one person so we can kill him. You have a group of 10 people in the city. Hand over one person so we can kill him, or we're going to kill everyone. Okay, the one person is not pursuing the 10 people, but his life is potentially keeping 10 other people from remaining alive. So the Gemara says, you must be killed. And you cannot hand over that single... Sorry, the Tosefta says, you must be killed and you cannot hand over that single individual. And it says, unless there's one case like the case of Sheva ben Bichri. What's the case of Sheva ben Bichri? So the Tosefta is referring to the case in Shmuel Beis, where Sheva ben Bichri revolted against David HaMelech, and Yoav, who was David's general, led an army to besiege the city where Sheva was, and there was a wise woman in the city who came out and said that you should tell the people in order to get Sheva that we are going to kill these people unless you hand them over, because Sheva is guilty of a capital crime, rebelling against the king, and therefore, people in the city, if you want to live, you better hand over Sheva ben Bichri. So this story seems to be the source in the discussion that it's permissible to save your life by handing somebody else over. And therefore, in general, you cannot sacrifice one person to save the lives of many. But if the specific Jew, says the Tosefta, is singled out and saying, we want person A, not that you have to pick from the 10 people, but we want a specific person of your group, then it seems from the Tosefta that you can hand that individual over in order to save the lives of the many. That seems to be the halacha in the Tosefta. A little bit jarring, but nonetheless, it says the Tosefta, if they distinguish one person they want to pick out of the group, then you can hand them over in order to save your life. The Gemara on the Yerushalmi there in Trumos presents an argument between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, whether you can hand over a person who is singled out like Sheva ben Bichri. And the question is whether Sheva ben Bichri's case was unique because Sheva ben Bichri was already a dead man walking. He was already going to be killed. In the eyes of Yoav and David, he was dead, even though he was walking around. And therefore, the argument is maybe only in that case, where no matter what's going to happen, either he's going to die with the whole city, or he's going to die by himself. So in that case, perhaps there's no benefit to keeping Shevim Mechri alive. So Rabbi Yochanan says that you can hand over a singled out individual, even if he's not deserving of capital punishment, in order to save the population. But Reish Lakish, Rabbi Yochanan's student and Chaver, says that it has to be exactly like Shevim Mechri. And the only time you can hand somebody over is when that person is already destined to die. Okay, if they just want to pick out that person just because to pick on him, that's not okay. But if he already has a bounty on his head and he's already a dead man walking, so then you can hand him over in order to save other people's lives. How do we paskin in this halacha? Because that will be important regarding the case of the trolley. So the Rambam in Yesod HaTorah, Perek Hei, Halacha Hei follows the opinion of Reish Lakish, that you can only hand over the individual who is supposed to be killed. But if the person is not supposed to be killed before you got into this little predicament of yours, so you cannot hand him over. The Kesef Mishnah on the Rambam and the Taz in Yoredeya, Simen Kuf Nun Zion, questions why the Rambam would follow Reish Lakish. Because as we said before, Reish Lakish was the student of Rabbi Yochanan. And the halacha, according to the Gemara in Yevamos, and Daf Lamed Vav, is when you have a machlokas between Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan, the halacha always follows Rabbi Yochanan, who is Reish Lakish's teacher. The Ramah also leaves the question in limbo regarding how you should really pass. No one's really convinced of the Rambam, who says that the person has to be a dead man walking in order to hand him over to save the other people. Now, the prevailing opinion appears to be that of the Taz. The Taz confers with the Bat's father-in-law, the Taz married the Bat's daughter, that the opinion brought by the Ramah should follow Reish Lakish, meaning that the person has to be a dead man walking. But he repeats the warning of the Rambam that you should not tell this to other people. What we just did right now, and it was being recorded, should not be repeated to the masses, because we don't want people getting this into their head that you can be handing over people in order to save lives. And the Shachs goes on to say you need to be very careful when it comes to weighing lives and to make this decision, and you need to look at every single possible side and approach. It's not a simple thing just to hand over another Jew to save other Jewish lives. And this is how they leave the question. On the other hand, the Vilna Gaon on the Ramah says that it's clear that the Rambam is wrong, as does the Chaznish, saying that the person does not have to be a dead man walking. You can hand over any individual who's picked out in order to save the other masses. Now let's get to the Chaznish. So the Chaznish, Rav Avraham Yishai Kerovs, was born in Europe, moved to Eretz Yisrael, and the Chaznish passed away in 1953. And his Chidushim on Choshen Mishpat were published 1 year before 1967, when Professor Philippa Foote published her essay. I'm fairly certain that Philippa Foote did not read Hebrew or Rabbinic Hebrew and never saw a copy of the Chaznish. But even before Philippa Foote set up the ethical dilemma of the trolley problem, the Chaznish wrote it down. Before Philippa Foote. The same exact question, the same case of the double effect and the dilemma of the double effect of the trolley problem. The Chaznish writes this extremely clearly in his Chidushim. Now, there is one account. The Chaznish had many people who said they were close to him. People who stayed in his house, people who spoke with him, people who you'll find nowadays writing things from their written by the children and the grandchildren of things that the parents said they heard from the Chaznish. So one of those people was of David Frankel. He was a confidant, or said to be a confidant of the Chaznish. And with David Frankel's children published his writings and his memoirs of him and the Chaznish after he passed away. The sefer is called the Zecher LeDavid. This is in volume 2, page 141. And it says that the Chaznish's discussion was not simply an ethical question that he happened to come up with. Rather, it's something that happened that was asked to the Chaznish himself. It records that there was a taxi driver who was driving down the hill and he lost control of the taxi. And in an instant, he needed to make the decision. Should he proceed where the taxi was heading into a group of people, or he could turn onto the sidewalk and avoid them, but he would have to kill the fewer amount of people who were on the sidewalk. And he wanted to know, and asking the Chaznish, did he do the right thing, and did he have to do tshuva for his decision? Now that whole background I just said is not in the Chaznish, that's in the Zecher LeDavid from David Frankel. Apparently hearing this from the Chaznish, or at least in the name of the Chaznish. But the comments of the Chazanish are in his Chedushim on Sanhedrin, Simon Chaf Hei. Listen to his words, because it is strikingly similar. A person sees a projectile heading towards to kill many people. And you can divert that projectile to another side. And you will kill only one person on the other side if you were to move the projectile. The Elu Shabbatzad Zeyatsulu. And those many people where it was originally headed for will be saved. Vim lo yaseh klum. And if you were to do nothing, yahargu harabim. Many people would be killed. Va'echad yishar b'chayim. But the one person would remain alive. V'efshar delo dami lamostrim echad lahariga. He says it is not the same as handing somebody else over to be killed. Dehasam hamasirihi pu'ula ha'achzira shel harigas nefesh. Because when I hand someone over to be killed, that is an act of cruelty that will directly lead to someone being killed. Ubapula ze leka hatsalas acherim, beteva shel hapu'ula. Says the Chazanish, if I were to isolate the act that I was doing, would it be an act of saving or would it be an act of murder? When I have 10 people in the city that want to be saved, and I have one person who's being picked out in order to save the 10 people, the act of picking that person up and handing him over to the people on the other side, that's an act of murder. If nothing else was going on, if there were not 10 people in the city, and I isolated that single action, it's an act of murder. It happens to be that 10 people will be saved, but the act of picking him up and handing him over is a murderous act. And therefore he says, Elisha Hamikra Garam Akshav Hatzalal Acherim. It happens to be causing the savior of people. Gam Hatzalal Acherim Kashur B'masha Mosam Ariga Nefesh Mishral. In that case, the act is murderous, but it will be saving people. Aval Hatayas Hacheis Mitzad Zeh, Mitzad Acher. But moving the projectile from position A to position B, he Be'ikara Pulos Hatzalah. If there was nothing else going on, and I could clear the entire image, and all I saw was a projectile or a train heading towards many people, and I were to move the track, that movement of the track is an act of saving, says the Chazanish. Yes, incidentally, the action will also lead to the murder of people, but isolated on its own, it's not a murderous act, it's an act of saving. And incidentally, the projectile will be heading towards somebody else. And therefore, he says, in this case, it's an act of saving. And it's tangential to the murdering of the other person on the side. Happens to be one Jew is standing there. And in that case, where? I have an act of saving that incidentally is an act also of killing. You need to save as many Jews as possible. Bahalo Lulinus Vapapus, he's referring to another case. And we'll get back to the end of the Chazanish in a second. And that is how the Chazanish approaches the question of the trolley. He says, when you are standing on the track and you switch the track, why do you have no problem switching the track? Because that's an act of saving. It happens to be incidentally someone else is going to be killed. But when I'm standing on the bridge with my extremely enormous friend who's perched over the edge, so in that case, it's an act of murder. My hand cannot bring myself to actively bring someone to their death. And therefore, that's what's clicking inside of me and saying, you can't do that. Because that's a murderous act. And that is what makes the second case not okay. So the Chazanish would say in the first case, it's perfectly fine. But in the second case, you cannot do an isolated murderous act in order to save other people. Now, the Chazanish is not fully committed to what we've been saying. He goes on to say at the end here that ulai, perhaps, garo dehorig be'adayim, it's worse if you do it with your hands, v'lo matzinu ela demotion ava la'arog be'adayim esher de'in horgin, perhaps it, maybe it's not so clear, and he says he's not, and he's really leaves in the case of Safek. And he's saying it's not halacha l'maisa. It's a nice theory, but he's not confident in order to, you know, bring this home all the way. And that is how the Chazon Ish leaves it. Now, the Tzitz Eliezer is one of the first people to quote the Chazon Ish, and he says that it's totally wrong. There's no way that it could be correct that you're allowed to actively do something to have other people be murdered. And Rav Binyamin Rabinovich Tumim, in an article in Noam, he disagrees with the Chazon Ish because he doesn't think there's any distinction. It's an act of murder, it's an act of murder, no matter how you slice it. Rav Bleich, in an article in Tradition, also saying he doesn't think the Chazon Ish is totally correct in saying that there's a difference between the two things. Now, we want to take the Chazon Ish in the remaining time we have, and we want to apply it to other cases and see if it fits. Let's take the following case that occurred in Eretz Yisrael many, many years ago. A building collapsed, either from a terror attack or some structural damage. A building collapsed, and there were many more people on the bottom floor than there were on the top floor. Just the way the building was set up at the time. And now they want to rescue the people in the building. And in order to rescue the people, to get the people on the bottom, they would have to use heavy machinery and dig and move around things, and in that movement of the collapsed building, you would surely kill people who were towards the top. So can I go in and get to that place in the bottom where the majority of the people were, even though it's going to end up killing people when I bring the heavy machinery in order to clear and to get through the rubble of the building? Essentially, was it permissible to kill the few in order to save the many? So an article published in 1989 in Asya by Rav Yitzhak Zilberstein. Rav Zilberstein has become famous in the last few years because he has extremely interesting questions that no one else thinks of. And he has very odd scenarios with very interesting answers. I think they just published a number of his farm in English. So he says that in the above tragedy, if nothing else would be done, and everyone would perish if I didn't do anything, so it would be permissible to use the heavy machinery. For why am I going to let someone should be saved? Why should everyone be killed? Let someone be saved. And then he invokes the Chazon Ish, and he explains that since those involved are performing an act of saving, since when I go into the building, my goal is to save. My goal is not to murder. My goal is to save. Therefore, the Chazon Ish would say it's not concerned murder, and I could go into that building and move things around, even though I'm going to surely kill people. Because the Chazon Ish would say, I'm going in to save. I'm not, my isolated act is to help people out. Not, the isolated act is not going to directly be murderous towards anyone. There's a fascinating sefer that was published a few years ago called the Mishnas Pikuach Nefesh. Rav Yosef Aryeh Lawrence was the son of Rav Shlomo Lawrence, who is a well-known Haredi politician. And Rav Yosef Aryeh Lawrence writes some of the most interesting sefarim I've ever seen. He wrote a sefer called the Plios Edusecha, which is a book about how like magic and demons and all these interesting magical things work in halacha. That's not really halacha v'lamaisa, but he wrote a sefer all about the laws of saving people. So he questions the transplant of the Chazon Ish into the above situation of going into the building. And he says the Chazon Ish only allowed the act of saving the majority if the act of saving would be harmless, because you are preventing a harmful object from killing people by performing an isolated act of saving. But in the above case, the heavy machinery is not necessarily an isolated act of killing. Because when I bring in the drilling tools, and I bring in all the tractors, it's directly going to be murdering someone when I put it on top of the rubble. So he is not so convinced from the Zilberstein's transplant of the Chazon Ish to the collapsed building. In fact, Rabbi Dr. Abraham, in his famous Nishmas Avram, on medical ethics and things like that, so he quotes Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and Rav Yashiv, who both said that in the case of the collapsed building, it is preferable to not use heavy machinery, to not go in to save the people on the bottom, because you will surely kill those people on top. So that is one place where we try to transmit the Chazon Ish, but we have deflected it away. In the Torah Journal, Torah Shabbat Peh, Mossad Rav Kook, the famous publishing house, used to have conferences every year on topics, and they would print up journals based on what different rabbanim said at the conferences. So in the volume of Torah Shabbat Peh 31, Shlomo Duchovsky, who's a Talmud Chacham living in Eretz Yisrael, so he also thinks Rav Zilberstein is wrong. Everyone starts jumping against Rav Zilberstein, and he explains that the argument of the Chazon Ish is first of all under debate. Why would you take a hotly debated principle and apply it practically? He doesn't think you can do such a thing. And he says, better we should follow the principle of shave the al ta'asa adif. It's better to sit back and do nothing than to actively do something which will be highly questionable and possibly take away lives incorrectly. And therefore, he says that he also disagrees with Rav Lawrence's opinion above, and he says that it's not appropriate to transplant the chazanish in the case of the building. And then the Mishnah Pikuach Nefesh moves on to another case. Let's say I have a life-saving medical device being used to save one patient. Can I disconnect that life-saving medical device and use it to save many patients? It's only saving one patient now, and if I disconnect it, I can save many patients. And he says, based on the chazanish, this act of killing cannot be permitted. Because by directly removing that medical device that is saving that individual person's life, that is a murderous act. I isolate it on its own, I'm killing him. Yes, I'll use it in a second to turn around and save many people, but on its own, the act is not an act of hatsala, of saving. Isolated on its own in a vacuum is an act of killing. According to the 9/11 Commission report, quote, prior to 9/11, it was understood that in order to shoot down a commercial aircraft would have to be issued by the National Command Authority, a phrase used to describe the President and the Secretary of Defense. Now, unfortunately, at 10:03 a.m. on September 11, 2001, at that point there was a discussion regarding how the military should proceed with any remaining planes in the air at that time. And they asked the President for the authority to shoot down any aircraft that did not respond. They asked him, and he said, okay. At 10:25, about 20 minutes later, President Bush gave confirmation that it is okay to proceed with that line of attack and line of reasoning. Now, it never came into practicality. They never asked for the command, and it never needed to be used. Flight 93 fell on its own. We'll get back to that in a second. But no one had to be shot down, and the question never even arose, practically. Now, at first glance, perhaps the chazanish can be used as a factor in deciding this question on this historical event. Now, shooting down a plane which has been hijacked in order to prevent it from being flown into a building which would cause greater loss of life than the people who are already on the plane. So, Rav Lawrence, in the Mishnah Pikuach Nefesh again, in Siman Nun, so he says the question is whether the very act of stopping the plane from hitting the building is an independent act of saving, or is it an act of murder? To shoot down the plane, is that an act of saving, or is that an act of murder? And he asked this very question to Rav Chaim Kanievsky, and Rav Chaim Kanievsky responded that he was not sure. He did not know how to apply the chazanish in this case. And Rav Zilberstein, in his Cheshukei Chemed, his Chedushim on Sanhedrin, so he says that it's without a doubt that the chazanish would forbid it. Because clearly shooting down the plane would have been an act of murder. And therefore, the chazanish would have never allowed his principle to use in that place. Because that would be a clear act of murder. But Rav Zilberstein does say, parenthetically, that those people on Flight 93, whatever this means, acted accordingly within halacha. Meaning, it was appropriate to down the plane in order to save the lives of many people. When you have the choice in your hands, he felt that would have been the correct thing to do, to down the plane in order to save a larger tragedy. And that is all the cases that we can apply the case of the chazanish. Again, there are other places of saving few to save many, cases in the Holocaust of handing somebody else over, if someone gets picked out of the line, but those cases are not the exact case of the projectile. The case of the chazanish is a very specific area, and we wanted to keep the discussion to that very specific discussion regarding projectiles and one in many. But we're not going to get into all the other side points regarding those issues. So let's conclude. So everyone would clearly see that contemporary poskim have upheld the chazanish, even though many earlier poskim said the chazanish was not practical, even though the chazanish himself said it was not practical. But forget for the halacha lemaisa, we can apply the chazanish to the case of the double effect and Philip of Foot. When you see the train hurtling towards the five men, and you want to change the direction of the train, so the isolated act is not an act of murder, and therefore it is not an act of cruelty, and therefore you would be allowed to change the track. But in the case of pushing the man off the bridge, in order to stop the train, it would be 100% forbidden, according to the Chazon Ish, because isolated is an act of cruelty and an act of murder. And many authorities have pointed out that the Chazon Ish is in a very narrow case, and we can't really apply it outside of any other areas, except that specific case. And also, the Chazon Ish would say that the most important thing is to save as many Jews as possible, only if it's a case of A versus B. I have group A versus group B. But if it's a case of A versus A plus, if I have a case of saving a few Jews versus more than that group itself, meaning adding on to the group, so then the Chazon Ish would not allow that. Only in the case of group A sitting on one side and group B sitting on the other side. But in the case of within a group, saving a partial amount of the group itself, in that case, you cannot do anything. Now, once you've established this dilemma, then you can analyze whether the act you will commit is an act of saving or an act of murder, and that's the only isolated case where the Chazon Ish would apply. There is one other shita I'm just going to mention. Rav Kook. Rav Kook in a tshuva writes in his Mishpat Kohen, he gives an alternate reason for preserving the life of many instead of one. And he says that even though we said before that one person's blood is not necessarily redder than another person's blood, but Rav Kook thinks that many people's blood is more valuable than one person's blood. Person to person, no one's blood is red than the other. But people to person, perhaps there is more value in that case. But the Rav Kook has not usually cited the halacha. In conclusion, we should never have to rely on any of these things, in any of these unfortunate cases, but at least for the sake of Talmud Torah and the sake of Dias HaTorah, we can see that the Chazon Ish also had an insight into contemporary popular philosophy. Yeah?
Based on what you said, would it make a difference for five people to have Jewish and one person white?